recording, now pause again.
Spent rollout of victim-friendly facilities at new police stations. All the new police stations we're going to build will have
of 1.5 billion, 1.7 billion, and 1.9 billion, consisting of adjustments where the average salary adjustment was for levels 1 to 12 was approximately 11.5%. So it's the carry-through of the salary adjustments. New policing personnel in the vicinity of 200, 230, and 250 million. Then the next big category was for accommodation, property management. There the amounts are 150 million for the next financial year, and then very credibly rising to 500 million in addition in the third or outer financial year. Those amounts are being split, a portion between the different sub-items, as follows: capital works 50-50-50, a three-way split in terms of the next financial year, and then for the subsequent financial year, a 300, 100, and 100 million split in this regard. This is also to boost the whole built and accommodation environment, as also reflected in the MTBPS. Then obviously the establishment of the DPCI, new monies in the outer financial year of 150 million, and then funds suspended from the Department of Transfer and Department of Justice and transferred to the Department of Police from the 2010-11 financial year of 205, 217 and 228 million. So all in all, 1.7 billion in addition for the next financial year, the one thereafter 2.094 billion, and then in the outer financial year, 2.8 billion, which will be added to the previous baseline with growth of the department. Now, if we look at the program structure again, reflecting the broad aims and objectives of the vote of the police, it consists of five programs, of which program one is basically a program which are prescribed through the right through government and which contains certain aspects. That's the program administration, consisting a number of aspects for the line function environment. Then program two, the biggest program is visible policing. The third program, detective services, crime intelligence, protection and security services. If I may, I would just like to raise awareness on, especially on this, from the previous financial year to the current financial year and the first increases. Obviously those are also important, but your appropriation will take place from the previous financial year to the current financial year, 14.22%, 4.8% coming from a very high baseline of 20.7 billion. 15.8% for detective services, crime intelligence 10%, and then protection and security services at 13% in this regard. Now the question then comes to the forefront on what has or will the money be expended in terms of these four programs. If we take the first program and we dissect it a bit, put more detail into it, one will immediately see it consists of a number of sub-programs, and as I've said, basically prescribed by the National Treasury across government, consisting of a minister and his minister's salary, deputy minister's salary, the management aspect, corporate services, and then property management. The purpose is to develop departmental policy and manage the department, including providing administrative support. Management includes the provision for the Secretary for Safety and Security, and we are frequent liaisoning with the Secretary in this regard. In 2010-11, corporate services, that's that one, the 14 billion, consists inter alia of training 1.386 billion, all information technology 2.984 billion, medical support 4.136 billion, that's to permit and to other medical schemes such as GEMS, and logistical services 3.264 billion, of which 1.118 billion is for capital works at this point in time. This basically gives one, I think, in the vicinity of 9, 10 billion, and a few others also remain in this regard. The increase in this environment is mainly due to intensified funding levels for training interventions, physical infrastructure creation, information technology, resource, the newly CJS revamp initiative, and intensely including EIJS projects, etc. If I may just indicate the physical infrastructure, I've indicated to members the additions in terms of the 150 million and the 500 million later on. Information technology will be the hosting and infrastructure networks, and then obviously the CJS part for information technology. There's a part that goes to the direct operational environment, for instance, in the FSL and CRC environments as well, and it reflects activities, goods and services for other programs such as buildings, computer systems, weapons, ammunition, uniforms, and so forth. So this program, to a large extent, feeds some of the other programs in terms of certain items. The expenditure trends, program two, visible policing. Visible policing is a very big program in the department and include three sub-programs, crime prevention, borderline security and specialized interventions. The purpose is to enable police stations to institute and preserve safety and security and provide for specialized interventions and the policing of South Africa's borderline. It's obviously the biggest program in the department. The weight is 39% of all funds that we've received. It includes visible policing personnel at stations. The borderline execution is under review by government. A submission of comprehensive border control strategy by the JCPS cluster in future is forthcoming. Then also one will find specialized interventions which decrease a bit due to personnel deployed at station level. They were centralized at some point in time, and then members will remember the restructuring in the South African Police Service, and obviously those personnel are also now transferred in the system-wise, not transferred physically. They have already taken up their positions a year or two ago, but they are being transferred as structures are created. And then also, one will find the reservists here, and the reservists act as a force multiplier in mainly under invisible policing and crime prevention environments. And then one will also find the security arrangements for the 2010 Soccer World Cup. And this also provides them the healthy growth of nearly 14%, if I recall correctly. Kevin, maybe you can just go back to the first one. Program one. That one, yes. The 14.22, the 4.81% in terms of visible policing, but coming from a very high base, 20 billion, which is 39% of the total amount of SAPs. Please go to program three. One is then moving over to detective services. This is also a program where a number of changes have been affected in recent times. It consists of four sub-programs, crime investigation, special investigations, criminal record center, and the forensic science laboratory. The purpose is quite explanatory of nature, and it enables the investigative work of SAPS, including providing support to investigators in terms of forensic evidence and the criminal record center. Now, there's a continued personnel capacity increase for detectives across all functions, not just general detectives and specialized detectives, but also other investigative personnel such as FSL and CRC personnel in this regard. The capacity building at forensics by means of additional funds for equipment. The CJS revamp initiatives will also strongly supplement further capacity enhancement at both forensics and the criminal record center. And then the specialized investigations, the second sub-program, consists of the DPCI, the latter that incorporates the former DSO, commercial crime and organized crime, inserted as a sub-program in the 2010. So we've basically amalgamated organized crime, commercial crime, the previous DSO, and we created a program called Specialized Investigations. The money shifted from justice to SAPS regarding the former DSO, which members will remember from a couple of slides ago. One will find here, and that is the 153, 205, 217 and 228.5 million. In the adjustments estimate last year, we received one amount, but now for the new MTF, we will receive the remaining three amounts for the new planning cycle. And the new money, obviously, for specialized investigations to the amount of 150 million is also added in this sub-program. And then one must just add and draw the linkage between the detectives in this program to receive specific training focus also in the next financial year, apart from additions in terms of capacity. get to the expenditure trends in Program 4, crime intelligence, it consists of three programs, two sub-programs, crime intelligence operations, 819 million, and intelligence and information management to the value of 894 million, all in all totaling 1.7 billion and going up to 1.8 billion in the subsequent financial year. The purpose is to manage the crime intelligence and analyze crime information and provide technical support for investigations and crime prevention operations. Personnel, compensation expenditure, very large part in this environment as a result also of more personnel that have been appointed and to be appointed in the next financial year or the current financial year. Excuse me. Operation expenditures associated with operations conducted is mainly fueling oil, travel and subsistence, huge number of personnel. Personnel is a cost driver in S&T and fuel and oil regarding crime intelligence. If we get to Program 5, Protection and Security Services, the attention is drawn to the VIP, the sub-programs, VIP Protection Services, to the value of 442 million in the current financial year, Static and Mobile Security, 629 million, Port of Entry Security, 1.128 billion in the current in the new financial year, Rail Police, a relatively new function in recent years, added to this program, 571 million, Government Security Regulator, 449 million, and then operational support to the value of 220 million. Totaling all in all, just in excess of 3 billion rand. The purpose is to provide a protection and security service to all identified dignitaries and government interests. The increase in this environment, mostly due to intensified funding levels for the continuation expansion of rail police projects and then various ports of entry, prioritized inter alia the following purchases and a number of aspects, the kind of goods and services that are purchased within this environment have been dotted down, noted there for members in order to see what kind of specialized equipment the department is purchasing for people working in the ports of entry and rail police environments. Members will remember that we've classified expenditures according to two main categories, the first being the program structure and the second being the item structure or the goods and services structure. Now, the one we've subdivided into a program structure, and now we have taken the same amount just in order for members to see, and we have reclassified it and restated it according to item structure. So each so the department consists of number of items as well, but the total amount remains the same. Now, the current payment is a very interesting aspect. The current payments consist of compensation of employees and then goods and services. Compensation of employees is the part, and that is a linear growth. That is not a weight. The weight is it should not be more than 73%. It's in the vicinity of 70%. So we try to keep compensation expenditure quite stable in a ratio format in order not to fall into the trap of increased personnel expenditure at the end of the day and not being able to have sufficient funding for operational expenses. There are departments who have fallen into this trap in recent years, and therefore SAPS has indicated this ratio as a very important aspect to monitor and maintain. So members will see immediately compensation expenditure and then goods and services expenditure, all small, less than 5,000 rand kinds of goods and services in terms of your capital, but in terms of other aspects such as S&T and fuel and oil will all be found within the 12 billion for goods and services. Transfers and subsidies is unrequited payments. That's unrequited payments, a payment where there's no real value, where you have a gratuity payout for a person going on pension or resigning and so forth. The other big category are then your payments for capital assets, which are your buildings and other fixed structures, and your machinery and equipment. So basically, the four big items are compensation, goods and services, and then capital expenditure being subdivided into buildings and then machinery in this regard. Members will also see that the compensation has an increase of 10% from last year to this year, 11% for goods and services, and then you will have buildings and other infrastructure 10% and machinery equipment 9.7%. in order to have a reasonable apportioning between the various items and address specific objectives in this regard. May I just also add that certain funds such as criminal justice system review, IJS and so forth, capital expenditure are all earmarked amounts and we have to expend according to the wishes of the National Treasury as endorsed by Parliament in the appropriation process. So those are all being apportioned in this regard. If we take the former schedule and we very in a highly summarized form and just refer to those, we say that the compensation of employees, we've explained it there to members, is the biggest spending category compromising of plus minus 71 of the total budget. Spending is essentially to pay salaries and contributions to pension funds and medical benefits. The increases are to provide for new personnel and annual salary increases. The goods and services is the operational expenses are provided for, and the increases over the medium term will allow for additional goods and services to be used by department, such as fuel, oil, small tools, equipment, travel, subsistence, communication, uniform, etc. For instance, our fuel account is in the vicinity of 1.6 billion per annum, which gives one approximately 203 million liters of fuel. Just an interesting fact. Then the transfers and subsidies, funds transferred to other institutions and individuals. In other words, it includes all unrequited payments made by the department. It does not receive anything directly in return for the transfer to the other party. And it includes to provinces and municipalities, mostly for the payment of vehicle licenses. That's an unrequited payment, a transfer payment in terms of this classification. Departmental agencies and accounts, landing fees for the aircraft and instrument grading for pilots and so forth. And in the households, this category reflects an increased level of spending over the medium term as to sustain sufficient level of funding for discharges and retirement payouts, death grants, medical treatment of detainees, injuries on duty, civil claims, and so forth. And then obviously one gets to the capital environment, inclusive of buildings and other fixed structures, explanatory of nature, as well as machinery and equipment above 5,000 rand, mostly to provide for the purchasing of new vehicles and other equipment. Those are just a very, very high-level summary so that one does not have to go and actually go and assess and dissect the figures as included in the estimate of national expenditure, the red books that all members received on their desk, I think, at the day of the budget speech. Now, if we go to certain items and also a high-level, a little bit of a further breakdown in the compensation environment. This is now the total personnel expenditure environment, the wage bill, salary, pension, bonus, cost of living, cost us in the vicinity of 26 billion per annum. New enlistments, those are enlistments in that year and also new enlistments of a previous year which are now promoted or transferred to a second phase of their training, 2.6 billion. All our allowances, overtime, standby, daily, Sunday, public holiday remuneration, 1.1 billion. The overtime, 700 million. The rental allowances, 942 million. Medical schemes, all in all, 4.4 billion. And then the scarce skills and promotions in the vicinity of 375 million, balancing back to the 37 billion of the compensation, funds provided for compensation, as members will see or have seen in the previous graph. And as we've said, this totally, all in all, 71% of the allocation. There's also a very important aspect, as members well know, one can take sometimes funds out of compensation, but you can never add funds into compensation except going back to the National Treasury and in most instances coming back to Parliament as well. Then it has been deemed appropriate just to indicate to members where are we going with our enlistments, because we have enlisted huge numbers of personnel in recent times. And we've said we want to go from a quantitative approach to a qualitative approach. The National Commission indicated it together with the cluster priorities. What we say is there was significant capacity expansion already. The appointment of new enlistments over the medium-term period is planned to total plus minus 17,500, comprising of 6,000 in next year, 6,600 the year thereafter, and then 4,700 in the third financial year, all in all 17,539. Now we say that since 2003 up to the previous financial year, 2008-09, Already 64,180 additional personnel have been appointed, apart from 29,000 replacements as well. It gives one a 53% increase. Obviously, immediately it says to the members or to anybody who assesses this, then training is a very, very important aspect. The growth from 02, 03 until the end of the EME, not just to last year, but if you take the whole period, it will be reflect 81,000 new personnel apart from 47,000 replacements as well. That gives one a 69% increase. These personnel are allocated to different functions based on a resource allocation guide, which work on time studies, frequency intervals, and other calculations in order to determine workload at a certain station, and then personnel are allocated according to this resource allocation guide. This is just a broad overview, and obviously there are much more dynamics in the personnel situation of SAPS than merely this, but it has been deemed appropriate to provide this to members just to see, based on a huge quantitative growth and training that took place, the time has also come to elevate the whole training environment and the training focus to much higher levels in this regard. Now, if we go to the recruitment strategy, we say the quality emphasis, replacements, because we have to stay where we are. Replacements still need to be affected to maintain existing personnel levels, because if we do not affect our replacements, we're going to start dropping off again on numbers and declining numbers. So we have to at least do the replacing the personnel turnover. Then we are thinking, and it's a very important aspect directed by our National Commissioner, the stipend to increase. The stipend is the amount of money that we pay a trainee in the first 6-12 months after recruitment to make it a better salary and then also attract, shall we say, more appropriate people who want to join the police. Then also specific skills areas to be prioritized. For instance, we are looking more at the legal, paralegal environment in order to see what we can do in order to enhance the statement taking and so forth at the police station in this regard. And therefore, we say specific skills areas to be prioritized. Obviously, if one starts paying bigger salaries, your numbers will have to drop a bit. So we've just increased to say the numbers will be reduced a bit, although we've indicated to members that we will still appoint approximately 6,400 people per annum still, although we want to do this. The prominence of investigative services, including general investigators, specialized investigators, forensic and crime scene analysts, obviously remain of the utmost importance. And then also we are looking to at the salary structure to say that the review of conditions of employment to enhance retention is also under assessment. This is basically a new direction in terms of the recruitment strategy, but my colleagues from the HR environment obviously has much more knowledge and indications in this regard. Then we just would like to indicate to members of the committee and put our training provision there. This includes all training regarding the compensation environment of trainers as well as the direct operational training fund, so to speak. 1.1 billion going to 1.386 billion for the next financial year. A healthy growth in order to also put our monies where our mouths are, if I may use that phrase. So growth in personnel numbers also requires significant skills development in order to promote enhancing the quality of skills development. The target group analysis, one then focus on sizes, the people to be trained, the skills to be obtained, and the necessary interventions in order to affect the aforementioned. Prioritize results of the analysis according to the strategic operational priorities. In General Cruiser's environment, a lot of training is being done, but obviously one still needs to prioritize. For instance, investigators or detectives is a very high priority and also need to be prioritized in this regard. So we will be spending in the vicinity of $1.38 billion regarding training. If we've basically indicated the kinds of training to illustrate to members the diversity of all the training programs and the magnitude that we have when we talk about training in the South African Police Service, it includes certain courses such as basic training, management and leadership training, specific crime prevention training, tactical skills training, investigation training, intelligence training, support, generic skills, and so forth, each again with its subdivisions in this regard, and that is what the $1.3 billion will be applied to. A further item that is deemed appropriate to bring to the attention of members is the integrated justice system. Now, we said to members that one of our high priorities will be the expenditure on technology. Now, there are a number of technological areas in the South African Police Service. One of them, the integrated justice sector, in order to address the so-called pipeline approach between SAPS, justice, correctional services, and even other departments such as social development and so forth. This is the IJS, and 99.9% of those are all technology, information technology related regarding spending in this regard. So this is one, this is an earmarked amount, so we cannot deviate from this amount, and we have to spend exactly spend less on of $295 million regarding the integrated justice sector, which is a technological environment. Excuse me. We say then that the strategy developed to ensure system integration and better coordination amongst departments, and the focus is on business architectural design, emphasizing integration and exchange of information between departments, ICT infrastructure, integrated case management objectives and identification services, and business intelligence. There are specific SAP-specific and transversal IJS projects, a whole list of them, each classified by its own, which are available for members of the committee should they be interested in them. Then, in addition, we are in SAPs. All of these systems and software and applications are developed, and obviously that will also necessitate then certain capacity in terms of your hosting and your network environment. I would like to indicate to members the huge amounts. It was $400 million going up to $700 million and will stay on the baseline of nearly $700 million. And for what is it? To upgrade the Numeris core is to be room, replacement of current network, improve throughput of data to Numeris is a central processing service that in essence will be upgraded, and the upgrading of the centralized data processing capacity to improve analytical capabilities, and then also various data lines to minimum standards up to station level. In fact, the stations are receiving priority in terms of their data line environments. So huge amounts will be expended in terms of the SAPS, in terms of the infrastructure, network infrastructure, and hosting environments. If we look at the forensic science laboratory, the capacity building, one will see amounts of 400, 500, 700, and 787 that will be expended in this environment. Included in the baseline allocations over the medium term, additional funding has been allocated for forensic equipment in the FSL environment, and to the following extent, 150, 50, 50, and 53, and $55 million over the MTF period, basically for equipment, also reflecting technology in this regard. We once again then can come to the criminal justice review. Please look at the intensification of these numbers, 200, 900, 1.850, a couple of 100%, basically from year to 900 divided by 2, what's it, 5, 4, nearly 400 and something percent, and then the outer year, over 100% in terms of the criminal justice system revamp, part thereof for IT, part thereof in order to make the crime scene attendance and the whole crime scene management better, but my colleague General Lutsoy will be able to explain this in depth. We say it's a targeted allocation to support service delivery improvements in the FSL CSC to the benefit of the whole CJS eventually, to improve the timeless investigation of crime scene, reduction and improved cycle times of forensic investigators, operational matters such as equipment provided for, and systems upgrades such as AFIS, DNA, and so forth to the benefit of the CRC and the FSL. Kevin? Then we get to the whole property management. I would just like to indicate to members, training of members, technology, infrastructure, big priorities of government as indicated in the MTBPS, and we try to relate all of them to them because it's in accordance with the overarching priorities of the government. This is the property management and environment where you have various kinds of classification, for instance, maintenance and property rates there at your left-hand side, municipal services, property leases, subtotal, and the one that where members are always interested in is the capital works environment where you are physically building new ones or additions, which will be $1.1 billion and even more to be expended in the 2010-11 financial year, totaling $3.1 billion. The day-to-day environment where we talk about paint, windows, door locks, and so forth in order for station commissioners to use on an urgent basis is in the vicinity of $164 million for the current financial year. This is a significant, a very big environment, and the $150 and the $500 million have been added into these baselines. Kevin. Then obviously the very prominent and contentious aspect at this point in time, the Soccer World Cup. In 2009-2010, we had a budget of 265. We actually expanded a bit, which we will present to members once legislative oversight by the committees of Parliament are also taking place. And then in the current financial year, we have an intention to expand in the vicinity of 640 and even a bit more, should it be deemed necessary to make a success of security arrangements in terms of the World Cup. The $640 million will be mostly applied to deployment of force levels to the various stadia, base camps, protection, and so forth. So funds were provided for equipment and machinery to be used. Latest amount mainly provides for deployment of large numbers of police officers prior, during, and after the 2010 Soccer World Cup, and it relates to overtime, subsistence, transport effects, and the growth in personnel numbers provides for 2010 Soccer World Cup deployments in addition. That's a very important aspect. We've grown a number of personnel during the year, so indirectly we've also made provision for the number of people to be deployed and being paid from the 640 for additional services during the World Cup, for instance, in respect of S&T overtime and so forth. This is the Soccer World Cup aspect. Then what we normally do, we provide to members of the committee just a very high-level, broad indication of what we think we have introduced in recent years, already introduced, either completed, either busy with, or to be done. And we say, we have done the compensation-related payments, personnel targets, 5% increase for new investments, so forth. We have addressed it, and we are still addressing it. Then the establishment of the Division Protection Security Service with especially rail, police, and ports of entry. Then also the aircraft environment, the aircraft which General Lamour has a lot of knowledge of can be explained. A very good modernized fleet. We've done the elections. Training is a very focused scenario. Then also reservists, new policing infrastructure, IJS programs. We say we've modernized and expanded the vehicle fleet, and but still a way to go in this regard. The DPCI has been incorporated. The firearm control system is on its way. Borderline security has been enhanced. General equipment such as bulletproofs and so forth, which the supply chain general Savula and his people will be able to handle, has been addressed. CJS review, the whole $901.850 billion is on the cards. Operational deployment system for vehicles in order to see how can we use our fleet better. Upgrading of resource capacity of the FSL, and then the network and hosting infrastructure, and then obviously the Soccer World Cup 2010. These are only but a few to say these are priorities that we have introduced and we have expanded on this, and we trust that it will be to the approval of this committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Is it all from the first? Okay. No question.
Chair, can I just make a suggestion that we run through the strategic plan and preliminary budget? Because if we were to go through the APPs as well, you won't have time to ask us questions. I think the APPs are in front of people. If there are particular areas that they would want to ask questions on. Otherwise, the committee members will probably not have a chance to ask us any questions at the end. I also just want to start by saying that at the moment, the Civilian Police Secretariat is a cost centre within the police. There is a process underway at the moment. Legislation is being brought before Cabinet in the next couple of weeks, which will then come to Parliament, which will change that situation quite substantially. I also want to say that this budget was a preliminary budget developed at the beginning of this year. Since then, as a result of the legislation and the finalisation of the draft legislation, as well as some of the functions which are going to move from SAPS into the Secretariat, there are going to be some budget changes, but we have discussed that with the CFO, and we believe that they can be accommodated, because certainly, for example, if you're talking about certain legislative things, SAPS will have those in their budgets already. They would just be moved across to the Secretariat, or if you talk about the CPS. So I think that needs to be borne in mind when dealing with this budget. In terms of the vision of the Secretariat is a transformed and accountable police service that reflects the values of our developmental state. The mission is to provide an efficient and effective civilian oversight over the South African Police Service and to enhance the role of the Minister of Police in regard to this. If you look at the objectives, it would be to provide timeous, evidence-based, strategic research and policy advice to the Minister. And I think I just want to focus on this quickly now, is that one of the things that I think is in looking at the legislation for the Secretariat, as well as for the ICD, one of the things that has driven that in terms of that policy is the white paper on safety and security, which really firmly puts policy and decisions around policy in the hands of the Minister to be determining that policy. And the Secretariat then becomes the resource for the Minister to be able to determine that policy. The second is to play an activist and interventionist role with regard to civilian oversight. And I think the importance is on the interventionist role. It's no good just producing endless reports on problems in terms of the police if there are not going to be serious steps taken to actually intervene and address those problems. To develop and contribute to a global view on police and on policy practices and methodologies, to develop and build strategic partnerships in the fight against crime, and I'll talk a bit later around how that is unfolding within the Secretariat, to strengthen the national dialogue and relationships on safety and crime prevention, to initiate policy-driven legislation on policing and security matters. And I also just want to touch on this. One of the things in the past is that what we're saying is that legislation must be policy-driven, and you will see that when we come to the actual nuts and bolts, that the Secretariat is in the process of developing a legislative arm, that the Secretariat will be responsible for the drafting of legislation within the department going forward. And then to perform any other functions as may be determined by the Minister. In terms of the constitutional mandate, the Secretariat gets its mandate from Section 208 of the Constitution, which requires the Minister to establish a civilian police secretariat under national legislation. And what we have done in the last couple of months is to develop separate legislation from the police which will reassert the independence of the Secretariat. That legislation will have to come to this committee because it also speaks to the role of provinces, and I'll expand on that a bit later. If we can then just move to the next, we'll come back to the slide at the end. If we can just then, and the preliminary budget, just jump two slides, Kevin, and the next one. Okay, if one looks at what what we are looking at dealing with in terms of the Secretariat. Many of the committee members will be aware that the Secretariat of Safety and Security, as it was called, and what's proposed now in the new Act is to call it the Civilian Secretariat for Police, was to a large extent relatively dysfunctional. One can say that SAPS was performing a lot of those functions itself, but one also has to blame the Secretariat for that situation, because the levels of capacity, et cetera, within the Secretariat were at an extremely low level. So one of the key challenges and one of the key things that we have got to achieve within this the next financial year is the reorganization of the Secretariat. And that includes both the institutional reform, which is basically dealing with the legislation that will empower the Secretariat and reassert its independence, but it also deals with reorganizing the Secretariat's capacity and aligning that Secretariat with what the institutional, with what is coming out of the institutional requirements, and making sure that the Secretariat is able to meet those requirements. And that is a process which we are currently embarked on with the DPSA in terms of reviewing our structure, looking at what the new legislation is saying around the Secretariat, and making sure that the Secretariat is able to align its capacity and to reorganize it in line with that. The second area which falls under the office of the Secretary is to support the Minister and to ensure that regular and quality reports on matters within the mandate of the Minister are submitted to him. Also to assist and provide support to the Minister with regard to international obligations. And one of the things is that the Minister has a significant number of international obligations. He also serves as the chairperson of the Minister's Council within SUBCOR, and the Secretariat is playing a more direct role with regard to making sure that there is a clear strategy and approach, and working with other government departments in terms of a clear strategy and approach to those international obligations. The Office of the Secretary is also one of the areas is to provide leadership and direction within the Secretariat to make sure that we have effective 5-year plans in place. We haven't at this point put those plans in place because of the need for the legislation to come into being, and that those 5-year plans then speak very clearly to the legislation. And you'll see a bit later that legislation is proposed to come before Parliament before the end of this session. One of the key areas as well is that if we're going to be looking at performance management within SAPS, we need to make sure that our own performance management within the Secretariat we need to make sure that we are above reproach in terms of our own performance management. So a key emphasis, given the dysfunctionality of the Secretariat, is to make sure that we put in place over the next year proper performance plans and measures and accountability measures for the staff within the Secretariat. Legislative support, and I spoke about that a bit earlier, that the Secretariat will be responsible for the drafting of legislation. You'll see here that we're talking about the finalisation of the bill that I've just spoken about in terms of the Secretariat, the finalisation of the ICD bill. Both those two bills speak to each other, and they will both go to Cabinet together and hopefully then come to Parliament before Parliament rises in this session. The CERA bill, which is a complete overhaul of the private security regulation system at the moment, and again a process that is going to be policy-driven. The amendments to the Firearms Control Act and the regulations, and also another area which is not necessarily going to come before Parliament this year, but which work is going to begin on during this year, is the review of the Police Act. The Police Act still speaks to the interim constitution, and since then we've had the constitution adopted, we've also had the White Paper for Safety and Security adopted, and the Police Act needs to be completely overhauled to be in line with those two pieces of legislation. One of the things that we have done is that if the Secretariat is going to assert its role in terms of oversight, then our relationship to Parliament is quite is quite important. We have established our own parliamentary liaison officer to be able to relate to Parliament. We're also well aware that a tremendous amount of information comes out of Parliament itself in terms of the police, and we need to be able to see that we are addressing what comes out of Parliament in terms of monitoring and oversight of the police, and making sure that if there's information that comes out of the select committees, the portfolio committees, the scoper committees, that the police are actually acting and being monitored on whether they are acting on that information. And hence we have actually looked at a specific focused role in terms of Parliament. One of the key areas which the legislation speaks to, and it's a process that we've already been involved in, and we've had extensive discussions with the MECs and with the HODs and the different departments, is the alignment of provincial structures with the Secretariat. If one looks at the Constitution, the MEC also has an oversight role in terms of the police. And each MEC has a specific department, part of which function is to provide oversight, as well as to provide community outreach areas in terms of partnerships, etc. And one of the areas that we have looked at in that legislation is how do we begin to align the roles of the provincial departments and the national secretariat, so that we begin to talk about cooperative governance. We have come up with an approach which talks about mutual cooperation and support and some degree of mutual accountability, which we believe is in the spirit of cooperative governance, but doesn't step on either the civilian police secretariat or the MEC's constitutional mandates. And that process of alignment is going to involve the provinces establishing secretariats at a provincial level, which will specifically focus on partnerships and oversight, and which will have a direct relationship with the secretariat. It also assists us in terms of not requiring a huge budget to be able to monitor this process nationally, that we can draw on certain provincial budgets that exist in that regard. So, and one of the areas in which that process is going to be monitored through is through the MINMAC structure. So that speaks to the alignment. The other is the relationship between the ICD and the Secretariat. And in relation to the ICD, one of the things that has happened in the past is that the ICD itself has basically had to take on certain functions because the Secretariat was not functioning effectively. So the ICD began to take on more and more areas of work because of the dysfunctionality of the Secretariat not providing effective civilian oversight. What we've tried to do is to look at what is the role of the Secretariat and what is the role of the ICD. And one of the key areas, which I know has been raised by Parliament on numerous occasions, is the recommendations of the ICD and the lack of implementation of the recommendations of the ICD. What we're looking at doing now is establishing a formalized relationship between the ICD and the Secretariat, where the Secretariat will be responsible for monitoring what are the police doing in terms of the implementation and reporting to the minister, so that you don't have a situation where the ICD comes to Parliament at the end of when they present the annual report and say, we recommended 800 and so many recommendations, not one was implemented. When we talk about an interventionist role, the Secretariat will be monitoring what comes out of the ICD's recommendations, and to be able to then say immediately, this recommendation, within 3 months, this recommendation is not being implemented and action being taken. So that's one of the areas, but also there would be certain areas which the ICD was actually involved in monitoring, which will come to the Secretariat and will be part of their civilian oversight. We are also looking at formalized structures and relationships which will guide that process. Another is looking at the issue of communication and special projects. What we're finding increasingly is there are a number of special projects which the minister is referring to the secretariat as the secretariat strengthens its role. Certain projects, for example, one would have heard the minister has asked the secretariat to look at the forensic services and the backlogs in the forensic services. The amnesty process and the monitoring thereof was a special project undertaken by the secretariat. And arising out of that, there are now a number of other issues looking at issues like the firearms registry and looking at how the firearms registry is functioning and problems around the firearms registry. So there's a range of different areas around communications and special projects. What we're not seeing ourselves doing as a secretariat is becoming our communication is largely around issue communication. So we wouldn't be building our own personal profile necessarily. We would be building profile around particular issues, be it the firearms, amnesty, be whatever. So our communication is really geared towards that. Obviously, there are issues around an upgraded website and being able to deal with some of those issues. Then we have looked at establishing a dedicated policy unit, which is a policy and research unit which will advise the minister on policy issues. The chief director of that unit has already been appointed, and we are busy restructuring that unit at the moment to meet its requirements. If you look at some of the objectives of that unit is to provide quality, timeous, and evidence-based strategic research and policy advice. And if you look at some of the priorities for this year, it's looking at an in-depth state of policing report to look comprehensively and particularly to link the state of policing report to the review of the Police Act. We're looking at the issue of the Metro Police and looking at problems surrounding the Metro Police and issues around a single police force. We're looking at the issue of private security, because what is coming out of this policy unit is going to guide the legislation around the private security. We're also looking at the community safety forums, that these community safety forums have been on the agenda for a long time, but we've yet to come up with a working policy and guidelines. And between the policy unit and the partnership unit, we are hoping by the end of this financial year, we will have piloted and come up with a comprehensive policy and approach to the rollout of community safety forums across the country by the end of this year. The issue of deployment and resource allocation and monitoring how SAPs are deploying and their resource allocation. The issue of sector policing, and then one of the issues that has arisen from the Cabinet Lahutla is the conducting of a victim survey to begin to understand and unpack the perceptions around crime. The other area of the policy unit is to develop the policy and research component as an information hub and best practice. And one of the things we want to do is we want to start, if one looks at the whole area of policy and research, there's a significant amount of international best practice, but there's also a significant amount of research work being done inside this country around crime, around issues of crime, that we don't have to necessarily reinvent the wheel on. So what we're looking at is and what we've established is a resource center which serves as an information hub, where information around policing can actually be captured and can assist in informing the policy and research unit. But we're also getting requests from the portfolio committee, etc., to utilise that. To develop strategic partnerships with Parliament, civil society, and the police. We've already spoken about the amount of information that comes out of Parliament. And that needs to actually be collated and used within the secretariat. But also there's a tremendous amount of information that comes out from civil society. And what we're looking at doing is, in the past, I think the secretariat's role has been one of contracting out work to civil society. That's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about here is partnering with civil society, being able to get some some kind of being in touch with what civil society, what research institutes are producing, etc., and being able to make use and utilize that information. The police themselves, through their crime information analysis center, through SEAC, etc., would also have a significant amount of information which would need to be utilized and which would be able to assist the minister in identifying trends and which would hopefully then be used for Parliament. One of the things we're also doing under this policy unit is to establish a reference group which is made up of renowned people in the policy arena who will actually be able to assist the policy group in terms of direction. What we also want to do is to strategically access and analyze raw research on SAFS data. And what we are looking at doing is to establish, and it comes up again under the monitoring unit, is to establish a specific database for the Secretariat which would be able to capture some of the raw data and which we would be able to then use to utilize that data. To work with, I've already spoken about working with other research agencies, both locally and internationally, to collect relevant research material on police practices and methodology locally and internationally. And I think that's really crucial, is that very often our approach to policing also is being very much a Eurocentric approach, looking at what the UK are doing, looking at what the states are doing. There's a tremendous amount of work that's happening in Africa and places like Kenya, and we need to be able to look at some of the best practices that are coming out of those countries as well. Then we have also established a dedicated partnership unit under Mr. Zemo as the chief director, and that partnership unit is going to drive the issues of beginning to draw in communities and create opportunities for partnerships in crime prevention. We also are looking at establishing a reference group in this area. There's a tremendous amount of organizations, etc., that are doing work around partnerships, and we would like to harness their expertise and to work with them. One of the things that is going to be happening is engaging with and the packaging of community partnership initiatives, and in this regard we're looking at three particular areas. The first is the issue of CPS. And we have had a discussion with the boards. The issue of administration and management of CPS is going to move from the police to the Secretariat. We've had a discussion with the CPF board about the need to actually relook at how our CPFs are functioning. If you look at CPFs across the country, they function completely differently in different parts of the country. You've got provincial committees that have never been elected for long periods of time. You've got at different levels. In some areas, the CPFs operate kind of like as almost like impimpies for the police. In other areas, they actually tell the police what operations to go on. Other areas actually do operations, and there's no uniformity in terms of how we're addressing CPS. So one of the things that we have agreed with the CPS board is that we're going to actually be putting together a policy document on CPS in the next couple of months, and that policy document is then going to lead to a revision of the constitution for CPS. We're looking at the issue of street committees, village committees, neighborhood watches, etc. A lot of these things have sprung up sporadically, but there isn't a uniform approach to, and it makes it very difficult for SAPs to know how do they even relate to all these different structures that get set up on the ground. One of the issues is looking at how do we utilize volunteerism. I think if anything, the reservist process after the last couple of months has shown us that this issue of stipends is not a sustainable issue. And if one looks at what's happened here with Bambanani, etc., some of these issues have shown that we need to look at a whole new approach to how do we address volunteerism. We've all spoken about the need for drawing in communities, engaging communities, for the issue of looking at how do we utilize volunteers in the fight against crime, but we need to do it in a way which is sustainable, and that's one of the issues which the partnership unit is going to be addressing in the next year. Enhancing strategic partnerships, and here we're looking at a couple of different areas. We're looking at the business community and what can the business community bring to the table in terms of skills and expertise which can assist not only ourselves but also the South African Police Service in terms of enhancing. We're also looking at the piloting of a small business project to look at specifically focusing on crimes and robberies that affect small business, because the impact of those crimes, both on our crime statistics but also on the economy, where if a major business is robbed, it has insurance that's able to deal with it. If it's a small business, it actually affects the ability to survive and indirectly has an impact on the economy. Also engaging with labour. We have already established a process with the trade unions within the police where we're looking at meeting with them regularly to discuss issues and some of the issues which they would want to feed into the civilian oversight area. And then also engaging with people like Action for a Safer South Africa along the lines of looking at campaigns and issues where we can begin to capture the support of the population in terms of dealing with certain issues around crime, such as secondhand goods. One of the key areas, and this is again something which came out of the Cabinet Lahotlip, is to pilot community safety forums. And I spoke earlier about the policy unit and its role in terms of developing community safety forums. What we are looking at doing is within the next 2 months is having a policy guideline in terms of community safety forums having been developed, and then for the partnership unit together with the provinces to pilot those guidelines in 10 different police station jurisdiction areas, and then based on that pilot, to be able to come out of that pilot very concrete policy document on how community safety forums should be established. We've already been in discussions with the provinces around their role in terms of driving some of these processes. And then the next unit which we established is the monitoring and evaluation unit, which is to provide professional civilian oversight capacity through active monitoring and evaluation of SAPS systems, processes, and approaches. And we're looking at developing a tool. We have already been engaging with the portfolio committee. We've also engaged with the provinces about the ability to utilize information that comes from parliamentarians when they're doing constituency work, etc., in terms of being able to capture some of the problems that they're picking up in terms of service delivery, but also to be able to use the different provinces where the MECs themselves often task people in their departments to go out and look at service delivery. We are looking at a database which will be able to then capture that information and assist us in that regard. We're also looking at things that exist within, for example, the performance charter and the systems within SAPS, which once the Civilian Peace Secretariat has access to, we will be able to draw information down from that. So you won't always have to go out and physically do the monitoring and evaluation yourself. And then obviously we've spoken about the ICD and the monitoring of the ICD. And then also to look at specific projects where we would be on a number of areas, it's not our role as the Secretariat, and we've said this from the beginning, to actually receive public complaints and action those public complaints. That is the role of the police. They must have a complaints mechanism. Our role should be to monitor how our SAPs dealing with the complaints. So if one takes, for example, the presidential hotline, our role is not to receive the complaints from the presidential hotline and then action those complaints. Our role would be to see why is SAPs not actioning the complaints from the presidential hotline and what are the blockages and what are the problems around that. So that has become one of the key areas, is to look at how does SAPs manage complaints themselves. Rather than for us to manage the complaints, what are the problems, what are the weaknesses in how SAPs is managing complaints? Then there would be special projects like the firearms amnesty, and I've already mentioned that already arising out of the firearms amnesty, there's an issue where we've now been asked to look at the whole problems around registration of firearms and the blockages that exist at that level. I've spoken a bit about to finalize the database system for the monitoring and evaluation, and then to undertake special projects. So generally, as a problem may arise, the minister would defer, would say to the secretariat, I want you to go and look into it, be it backlogs in the forensic laboratories or missing weapons, whatever it is, that there would be special projects which the minister would task the secretariat with investigating and reporting back on. Also one of the things that we have identified and we're looking at within the next year, focusing on three provinces, is to look at local service delivery at the local station level. And we're looking at establishing multi-teams, which involve people from the provinces, people from our from the Police Civilian Secretariat, as well as some people from the business community, etc., to actually set up teams that will visit three provinces during this year, and we'll visit each and every police station within those three provinces, and we'll be able to put together a comprehensive report on what are the problems at those station level, in that particular province. So by the end of this year, we would hope to have, say, for example, in Mpumalanga, to have been able to present a comprehensive picture to the minister and to parliament, if necessary, on what the state of local policing is in that particular province. What we would like to do is do this over a 3 or 4 year period, but by the end of those 3 or 4 years, you've got a state of local policing in each and every province. So we've identified three provinces for the first year. The other area is for us to be able to monitor what agreements have been reached in terms of the Cabinet Lekgotla, that the performance agreements, that the APPs that have been presented to Parliament, and to make sure that, to monitor those and make sure that those are being implemented. Just before we move on to the next slide, which is the human resources slide, I just want to say that one of the things that has come up subsequent to this is that we are looking at the establishment of a dedicated legislative unit as well. But this has come up in relation to the legislation, and we will be in discussion with SAPS around that. We don't believe that the budgetary things cannot be accommodated within the budget. We've already had a discussion with the CFO and don't believe that those can't be accommodated within the existing budget. One of the issues for us is if we are going to be looking at the legislation. Sorry, just move on. Sorry, I didn't keep telling you to go down. Sorry, Kevin, if you can just get, yeah. If you look at the human resources, one of the issues for us is that if we are looking at becoming a designated department, we are going to have to improve our support services. While it's been problematic for the independence of the secretariat to operate as a cost center within SATS, it's also been quite comfortable for us because SATS do most of the hard work, and we just have to do the kind of activist work. Now, if we're talking about becoming a designated department, we have to make sure that our personnel sections, that our support services are able to actually deal with becoming a designated department. So you will see in the strategic plan and with the budget attached to it, we are looking at these very clear issues that need to be addressed in terms of human resources and our policies and our approaches and even our staffing capacity and implementation of that in terms of human resources. And the same applies to our support services and the need to improve our support services and our ability to be able to deliver, where we're not going to be able to just be dependent on SATS systems and having to do half the work and SATS do the other half. So we've included a significant amount of responsibilities under that. And then if we can just go back then to look at the finalized budget, which is on page 4, 5 of the presentation. This was the budget as of the beginning of this year. As I said, there are certain functions which are going to be coming across to the secretariat, but they won't have that many cost implications because their budgets for those things within SAPS already. Also, our human resources capacity is going to change depending on based on what comes out of the DPSA reorganization process, but that is also a matter that we have discussed with the CFO, and we think we would be able to, certainly in this year, be able to accommodate those changes. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. honorable members, can you engage with the reports? Commissioner? Yes, honorable Bloom.
I don't think he's commissioner anymore. You must also call him now general.
Frank Chapman, I think I will start with the last one. I'll start with the secretariat going up. How far is the amendment of the Police Act? If this amendment is made, are you going to include the clause which will bind the National Commissioner to comply with the instruction of the recommendation from the ICD? You were talking about the multi-party team, which you are looking to establish. By when? And which are those three provinces identified in order to start with the investigation or the report? Okay, coming to the strategic plan. Improving of the ratio in the vehicles of the in the vehicles. I said, if you are going to improve the ratio, are you going also to look into the safety of members? For example, let's say sometimes the vehicle will take two members, and then if you improve that, sometimes you say one member per vehicle. What about man safety of that police officer? Okay. Contact crime reduced by 1,288 per 100,000 by 2011. What yardstick are you going to use in order to see that, no, indeed this will be a yardstick and to can reduce this thing? What strategy are you going to use? On the border duties, you said 225 action, but your target is 350. Talking to, for example, the Lesotho border where there is no fence, how are you going to monitor this? Because, how are you going to monitor this? In those instances where you said you are still going to determine the baseline, when are you going to do that? Because the year is moving and the strategic plan must work. The DSOs, when they were amalgamated with the police, we know that they had their own salary. How are you going to deal with the salary of the members of the Southern Police Force? I will never say service, because they are now general force, because they differ with salaries. Let us go to DNA. Since there is an outcry about the DNA, you know that if people are dead, they need postmortem as soon as possible, such type of. How long will is this DNA take before it could be released to the members, well, to the investigators, I meant to say. And then coming to the here you were talking about the the Dangerous Weapons Act, but assaults and serious crime are committed with, in the schools. How are you going to manage this? Because it is an outcry. You find that school children are using dangerous weapon, going with a dangerous weapon in school, knives, panga, such type of. This includes also the drugs. What strategy do you have in order to minimize these things? The airstrips, we know that it is during FIFA World Cup. How many private airstrips around the country and the provinces? If any, are they monitored in order to safeguard them? Because people can just come and land and drop some articles or drugs. Then we find that our soccer World Cup is no longer safe. While at that is, or at members who are working around in the borders, our SAP members, are they having a suitable or adequate resources? And also the type of clothes they are wearing, the uniform, because at the Lesotho border, at Matatiela, those places is very, very cold. This crime perception management, it's a perception, we understand. You are saying it's a campaign so that members of the community can help in dealing with the crime. But are you also winning the perception of the public that South Africa is not like any other country, it's so safe in crime, because they believe that, no, if they can go away to Brazil, they will live okay. But are we trying to turn that perception of the community in our country to say that this country is safe, South Africa? Okay. Since you are called now generals, it goes with the discipline. I want to tell you, when doing the oversight, members are very much happy about these ranks. It means the morale is up. Now, will it go along with the discipline where a commander, if you say you're a senior officer, you give the instruction, that instruction will be complied with? If so, how will you go about dealing with the union, because they're going to trample on your toes? I'm sure it's only two left. Improve, resume, many percentage. Okay. This improving of the capacity of the intelligence and their resources. You know that the intelligence is the backbone of the country. If we are saying we are going to improve their capacity, by how many? And if the resources, if you are, or are you meaning the human resource or vehicles and other things, they must have suitable resources. By how many? I know that some of what you cannot give an exactly figure, but give in percentage. Prevention of corruption. What are you doing with the corruptors, people who corrupt the police, or the corrupt, I will talk with the police. Do we have a strategy to fight these people who are corrupting these people? Because it's a temptation. I think that was the last one. Thank you.
Honorable Matila.
Yeah, Chair, the Secretariat, I see you need something like 21 billion. Is it million?
Yeah.
Oh, because I was worried. I thought that, but this looks like a billion. Yeah, it's 21.327490. Oh, it's million. No, I was worried. I thought it's a billion. I wanted to understand this to, in terms of human resources, you know. Are you establishing another department? Because in South Africa, we're always there to establish departments. Was one police to go on the ground to do policing, you know? And that's what I was, I'm happy it has been corrected. Because that was an area that I must come in and check as to what is it that you are trying to do. If it's 21 million, no, that's not much.
Another group?
Oh, yeah, no. Jefferson, thank you very much. I think that the commissioner and Dr. Matila have covered all my questions. Thank you very much.
Honorable Becker, Chairman,
I like to make a, I have a question. I like to make a remark. If I was listening to you and your whole plan and everything, I feel secure and safe. And I thought, hell, you. And I must congratulate you with this plan you put on table today. Mm. But as I go down to ground level, I'm a bit worried. I'm worried about a bloke who is arrested for drunken driving, and 2 years later he was free because the evidences get lost. I'm worried I'm from Oudtshoorn, if I drive past the scrapyard and there's more cars and buggies in the scrapyard than at the station. I'm worried if I think about the firearm. What is going on? People are waiting more than 1 year for 2 years, and nothing happened. And then if I go into town and there's a college, a police college, and I mix with the students in the bank and in the post office, and I look at them in the streets. I go to the nearest police station. I get worried. I get worried about the attitude of those people. So what I like to say is that it's an outstanding plan that you've got, but I'm worried about how you are going to implement it. Ek kan net sê sterkte vir julle, want ek weet nie hoe julle dit gaan regkry nie. Dankie.
Hello. Oh, Chairperson, my interest I had when we're talking about the CPF and the CSF. CSF, yeah. Now, I understand that they are formulating the constitution and the policies around the issue of CPF. But at the present moment, my understanding is that, as they were saying, people are setting up street committees and the police are involved. Don't you have, in the meantime, maybe a concept document that is guiding them a little bit, or some kind of a framework, so that at least they can be guided? My main worry is that I'm actively participating with the police in formulating these things, where I'm coming from. Like in terms of street committees and the CPFs, we're working together, but it is clear that we're working together on the assumption that we want to make sure that the police are rising. But the bottom line is that when there's crime happening on the street, what is the street committee member does? Maybe he or she reports to the police, but then what is safety? There's nothing that says maybe if this member of the street committee is found by maybe criminals or whoever collaborating to the police, this is what can be done to protect that person. I mean, there's no legislation, and even in terms of the police, there's nothing that can assist the police when they're intervening. I mean, there's nothing that regulates. I'm interested to know, is there no measure that the police can start developing so that even members of the community that are beginning to assist at the street level can be a little bit protected? Thank you, sir.
Dila.
Okay. I thought it is important for me because in terms of your strategy, we are aware if you open the media on a daily basis, you know, if you look at serious crime, a lot of police officers are involved. Even senior policemen have been arrested. You know, in terms of your strategy, you're not telling us anything around dealing with that particular situation. Because I haven't heard you indicating anything around that specific area. Because you're arresting a lot of police officers, you know, for example, for hijackings, for cash in transit problems that are there, robbery of banks and all those things. Now, I haven't heard anything around that specific area as to what is it that you're doing. Because, you see, your strategy seems to be good and nice on paper, you see. But if you have, let's say, 10% of police officers being criminals themselves, how are you going to deal with this crime in the country, you know? Because I'm just worried about that aspect. Four policemen arrested for committing a specific crime. Two, I'm coming from a locality called Mamelodi. At some point, the Mamelodi police station was almost 50%. Nobody wanted to deal with the Mamelodi police because they knew that they are all corrupt, you know? And they are part of this criminal syndicate. Even though most of the police are getting involved into all these other problems, you know? It is because criminals are informed by the police as to what will happen when and how, you know. But my worry and key question is, in terms of your own strategy, you are not coming up with anything regarding dealing with, not necessarily corruption, but criminals within the police force. Because from senior police today, it's news. We all know that the former commissioner is sitting in court in Johannesburg. Well, that's something else around corruption. Yeah? That's something else. But that is because if such senior people are involved in crime, it sends a very negative message around our police force in the country. Okay. And you are talking about the borders. Since the army has been removed from those specific borders, the police have messed up those borders. And that is why we have all these problems. No, we're not sure as to what has been happening, but a lot of things are happening across this particular border because nobody's looking. Because, you see, you might be looking at the border gate alone. Yeah? We're not sure as to, the commissioner has just indicated, there are open fences, you know, people. We're not sure as to what is happening in that particular regard because the army was removed and the police force was brought in to deal with our borders. We're not sure. You're not telling us what is it. We know that there's a rethink of bringing back the army at the borders themselves. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, you can respond to the questions. Yes.
Our questions are a bit simpler, so we'll respond first and then maybe SACS can respond. I'm going to ask the Head of Policy to respond to the question about the Police Act and the revision of the Police Act. Mr. Kinnis and Mr. Zemo will respond to the issue on the CPS. But just in terms of the three provinces, we are in the process of finalizing those three provinces. We will have them finalized by the end of this month, and we would be happy to come back to you and say that these are the three provinces. We're trying to work it out. We've been having a debate about, do you work it out on crime levels or do you work it out on performance levels? But we're hoping to finalize that by the end of. We've already established the national team, which involves representatives from Business Against Crime ourselves, but depending on the three provinces, there will also be provincial people from the provincial departments that will be engaged in that process. So each of the MEC's offices will also supplement them. We would also be very happy to, and we've agreed this with the Portfolio Committee, to at the end of each province's review to present a report to Parliament on the state of those three provinces. Then I'll just quickly on the firearms issue, we have been asked by the Minister to look at the question of the problems around the registrations and the blockages, and we have started work on that issue, and hopefully some of the issues you raised around how long it takes to get a firearm will be addressed within that process. Then I'll just hand over to Mr. Kins and Mr. Zemo to answer the other two.
Thank you, Chairperson. The work on the review of the Police Act have already started, and we're starting with a section on looking at community policing and looking at the guidelines of how the community police forums have been functioning since 1994. So we'll start with that process immediately. Originally, the review was supposed to be for next year, but the Minister have instructed us to start this work immediately. We're going to work with it on sections, because each of the sections around the Police Act is going to have to be intensive, and we do want to commission a state of policing report so that we can look at all of the sections, so that can help us then inform what goes into that Police Act, Chairperson. Okay. Oh, sorry, on the ICD, in terms of the question, will the commissioner be bound? Yes, we think that the commissioner will have to be bound by the recommendations of the ICD, and that is why there is separate legislation.
Yes, Chairperson, on the question on the concept document on CFF, if honourable members look at page 20 of the presentation, the target is to have finalised that document by March 2011, but we should finalise the working document by the end of May.
Chairperson, thank you. I think I'm going to start with the last question. What are we doing with the corrupt officials in the organization? If you look at our presentation on page 10 as well as on page 16 in terms of our strategic plan, we specifically have a corruption plan for the South African Police Service in place. So if people are involved in any criminal activities, they are being treated like any other criminal, and we also have a disciplinary procedure that we follow internally. I think the honourable member is saying that there is 10% corrupt people in the police service. I think this actually...
I'm not saying so. I'm saying if there's almost 10. Because you see, if in the newspapers almost every month, twice or thrice, four policemen, two, one are being arrested doing crime, you see, that's a difference between corruption and criminals, you see. And my focus around corruption, you're addressing it. I'm saying, what is it that you're doing? Because in terms of the strategy, you need to indicate as to how you deal. Because you see here, people are involved in serious crime, and serious crime is something, killing people in the process, doing, because they're going after this cash in transit problems and all those things. You know, police are involved into that specific that type of crimes. Unlike corruption, where a person is being bribed, I can see you're dealing with that situation. I'm seeing around this other crimes, because the police are involved into them. Your strategy around making sure that you turn the situation around within the police forces itself, it's not there. I have not heard you talking about that. It was corruption, yes, you're talking about corruption.
Chairperson, we do have strategies in place because we have awareness programs that we almost on every parade that we do every morning, we sensitize our members. But if they are involved in criminal activities, they have been dealt with like any other criminal in the country. So they will be locked up, they will be going through the disciplinary procedure. A moment that their criminal act is involved, they normally are dismissed out of the service immediately that they are in prison. So I'll also ask then Commissioner Lamour, Commissioner Luli, Commissioner Lala and the Deputy National Commissioner Slela to respond on the relevant questions. They can deal with it in a bulk relevant to their environment.
Thank you, Chair. To address the question of ratio of members to a police vehicle, we currently stand at 4.51 to 1 vehicle. We have a policy that members are not allowed to drive individually in a car. Our target is that to maintain this ratio or to improve it. To improve it will not mean that every member will have a vehicle. It's not acceptable. And that can be very expensive.
Mr. Lamour, will you please deal with this in your environment?
Thanks, Chair. The issue on the airstrips, let me start with the airstrips. Yes, we know exactly how many airstrips is in the country. I don't have the exact figure, but it's over 1,200 smaller airfields and airstrips in the country. There are members trained in all provinces. The identification of these airstrips is per police precinct. So each and every station commander have a responsibility to monitor all these airstrips. For the purpose of the World Cup, there are people trained in the specific precincts to deal with this as part of the security plan for the World Cup when it comes to airstrips. That is the first part. The issue of borderline, adequate resources, yes, we have enough resources, and that resource has been improved on a year-to-year basis. When it comes to uniform, we developed a jacket for our members at the Lesotho border that will be distributed to them, and now it can become minus 10 degrees in the Lesotho border, and we're dealing with this. The issue of the border fence, I think the border fence or fencing of this country, the borders of this country, is not the responsibility of the South African Police Service. We deal with the current situation in the border region, and that's why the deployment of the SANDF is a joint deployment between us and the SANDF. And the issue of how do we measure the amount of operations, I mean, each and every month, that report will come in from the different deployments at the border region, and then through that process, we will then monitor the amount of operations within the border region. If we go to the issue of the Dangerous Weapons Act and the issue of the schools, I think there is a partnership between ourselves and the Department of Education. I mean, we as from the South African police side, we can't just move on to school premises, but there is a very good relation between ourselves, the schools, the education department per province, and also the National Department of Education. So jointly, we did develop plans how to deal with this. But the issue is not how many children we arrest during on our school premises. Rather, if we can't arrest, if we don't arrest any children, it means that schools and the education department start playing their role also. Because excess control at schools is not the responsibility of the South African Police Service. And what children bring onto the school premises is also become the responsibility of the Department of Education. Thanks, Chair.
In relation to when would we be dealing with the percentage of court-ready cases, we have written over here, to be determined. One of the challenges facing us is that we have two different systems in place by the Department of Justice and by the law enforcement agencies. Why do I say systems? Not really systems, but we have the Department of Justice do not have the same kind of compatible boundaries that we have as law enforcement provincial boundaries. So, for example, like in Mpumalanga, they would have three deputy directors of public prosecutors over there, and the cases would be referred to junior courts and then to those three different directors of public prosecutors for right around Mpumalanga, and if there's no decisions that can be taken, it would be referred back to Pretoria. So you have an abnormal situation happening over there. Then you have an abnormal situation arising from the fact that our detectives generally carry the dockets on their own. You have an abnormal situation that the Department of Justice deals with the dockets as they come. Another example to indicate to you the confusion that happens, that you will find that one investigating officer in Milnerton has to go to, or one investigating officer has to go to three different courts, because the courts
are divided into such a way that there are different boundaries of where the crime of the incident have taken place. So we have that complication which we are involved with the Department of Justice to overcome, so that we know in a prosecuting office and an investigator they are dealing with these exact number of dockets and cases, and therefore we don't have anything slipping through the pipeline. Because in the past, we would have the story, dockets have gone missing, we don't know whether it's with the prosecuting authority, whether it's with the police, and what have you. Eventually, we find sometimes in the archive, sometimes with the prosecuting authority, sometimes with the police, and sometimes we report very often to Parliament that dockets have gone missing, and later on we find it to one authority or the other. So what we have is a faulty, we don't have a system in place. So we're trying to develop the system. The Justice Department and us are involved in consultation to deal with the system. And they are trying to adjust those processes so that we know for exact how many dockets are going to each court and how many dockets are taken by the detectives to each court. So we are trying to establish at provincial level a management tool so that each provincial head of detective services and each provincial manager of the prosecution services will be able to have the same kind of numbers and the same kind of documents allocated to the same investigators and to the same prosecutors. So we're in that process. The other thing just to add is that I think we all of us are trying to grapple with the issue of e-docketing. Just to add, to help us to deal with the issue of corruption, to deal with the issue of the criminality of some of our policemen as well. We have, for some considerable period, have been having some degree of frustration, and these frustrations do not take place on the part of any individual institution or what have you. It's basically infrastructure problem within the country. So we have asked CETA to be able to put extra services to the stations where there's hardly any infrastructure. We have some degree of capacity in the urban areas where we have the e-docket system. So we know what's in the docket, what the statements in the dockets are, and where they, I mean, how far the investigation is. In the past, we would rely on the dockets to be dealt by the investigator who just walks with the docket, keeps it in his car, keeps it in the safe, and what have you. But now we have some measurement of, or some tool to be able to say what is the status of the docket, and it helps us to limit the possibility of corruption. But we have to reach out across. And we are having some degree of organizational capacity problem with the people who are involved with the information systems to be able to actually make the final connection to all stations so we can have this capacity on board. So that's where we are. So in short, the linkage problem of to be determined is a very complex problem, but what we don't want to do is to lose it from here. Once we lose it from here, it escapes through the cracks, and then we'll never be able to deal with corruption, missing dockets, and the criminality of policemen who are involved in crimes, and so that they remove the dockets and they still get involved in other cash in transit and etc. Thanks. Commissioner Abdulli.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'll deal with the question of capacity within crime intelligence. Chairperson, currently crime intelligence were at 7,000 plus. Meanwhile, in reality, we're supposed to be 9,000 plus. So we have taken a step with the Divisional Commissioner of Personnel, Divisional Commissioner Pashana, to ensure that we capacitate crime intelligence. For the past 7 months, we have done some inroads. Although I can't give exactly figures, but I think we have more than 500 people we have employed so far. Of which those people also need to be trained. It's another challenge which Lieutenant General Cruiser is busy assisting us in that regard, and is still going to assist us with those new members who have been employed. When it comes to resources, we are aware that these nowadays, most of the crimes that are being committed by means of IT systems. Hence, we need to also capacitate the cyber units who are dealing with the systems within the CI. But also, one have to look at other equipment which assist us in our day-to-day operations, where you find that certain criminals are using certain methods to commit crime of which were bound by law to work on those issues. So most of the equipment which I think that are critical for CI that are linked to IT, of which can assist a lot in terms of improving our performance. Chairperson, I know that we've been struggling, but the National Commissioner as well as the division training and the division personnel, they have prioritized crime intelligence since last year. If I'm not making a mistake, the minister has made a commitment that probably by this year we will have achieved a certain number of employees in CI. So yes, there's still a challenge, Chairperson, but we are working very hard in order to close those gaps which we are encountering in the current. I think I've touched on the issues which the honourable members have raised. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable.
You can continue.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. With regard to the biology section responsible for DNA, yes, we have had many, many problems in the past. We still sit with some problems, but I can report that thanks to all the latest initiatives from government, we are in a position where we can say that we have increased a lot. 2 years ago, it was possible to move to a separate building, only dealing with biology and DNA, a specific lab, a laboratory built only to deal with it. Due to the capacity problems, now we embarked on a capacity building problem with regard to DNA. We have received a lot of extra money. It was indicated there. We have replaced the old equipment with new equipment. We have recruited extra personnel. For example, last year alone, we have added 279 people to the forensic science laboratory. Not only that, we embarked on specific training programs, which were successful. When we started with this initiative in 2006 with regard to the DNA and try a change around program since 2007, the turnaround time were in excess of 250 days with regard to DNA. After our prioritization projects, we have implemented where we prioritize the court dates, children and women, the serious cases, etc. We can report now that our turnaround time is now less than 90 days at this point in time. And we are still improving because more and more of the people are declared competent to perform certain functions. And once they are declared competent, we can send them to court. They can complete the full functions in that regard. This also assisted us over the last year to bring our backlog down with more than 14,000 with regards to DNA. So I'm very confident that due to the expansion as we have seen it here, the capacity building, that by the end of this financial year, we will be in a very fortunate situation with regard to that. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Any further engagement, Commissioner?
Chairperson, the issue of dangerous people, I want to add this. I think the police still having a problem about the declaration of firearm-free zones in schools. If you are saying all the departments are working, they're having good relationship, I don't want to say no. I can indicate that now, about 2 to 3 ministers, I had engaged with them, writing letters, they didn't respond, in order to come to sit on the table
so that we decide on the firearm free zone, which is the breeding ground of criminality there. I think it's a comment, Chairperson, that the Department of Education and Department of Police, the minister must sit together and do something about the crime, the firearm free zone in schools. Thanks.
Hello, Bloom.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. No, it's only one question, Chairperson. The morale of the police, service delivery protests. There's now much marches of the SAMU, and every day you see that police are in the firing line. Especially when it comes to service delivery protests, what is the morale of the police? They have been blamed. They are not properly trained to exercise public control and handling. What is their morale?
Thank you.
Hello, Matilda.
I'm not sure if I had. Well, but I think somebody spoke about a single police force. Yeah. Now, my worry, Chair, is a few years ago, you collapsed all these forces into a single police force. You started creating metro policies again. You see? Now you're going back to the same situation. Now, why this up and down? Because I'm not sure what is it that you're trying to do now. You see? Because we thought the Metro Police now has a specific role to play in making sure that they deal with some of the issues that affect municipalities on the ground, not necessarily what the police is doing. Now, if you come with this concept again of a single police force, maybe explain, because you see, why did you in the first place collapse all these forces into one police force, you see? And why now all of a sudden you want to change the situation again? We need some explanation and some clarity, because I don't agree with that particular approach. Are you saying you want to take over what is supposed to be done by municipalities on the ground? I know that in terms of the Public Service Act, that what they're trying to do is to change that law where you have one public service throughout the whole country up to local level. Is it what you're trying to do in terms of the police force? Maybe explain that situation.
Just to say, what I said to you is it's something that's being explored. Is the single piece. What we're finding is that there are tremendous problems. I mean, some of you will have seen in the newspaper today the statement that was issued by the minister about weapons going missing at a municipal level, and the alarming number of weapons that are going missing from the Metro Police. That's just one indication of a number of serious problems that exist at a local level. Now, what we're saying is that this issue needs to be looked at. Okay, there's been comments made, and there have been issues on the table about whether, in fact, this issue of a single police force and certainly greater command and control thing is something that we would look at. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying we're going for it. I'm saying this is something which we are currently looking at. What are the problems? What are the issues that exist or don't exist around command and control? Because this department is also responsible for looking at safety and security broadly, not just in terms of the police. And if we're talking about safety and security, we also need to make sure that the Metro Police are also held to certain standards and abilities. And that we're not saying this is what we're going for. We're saying this is an issue that we're exploring. That's it.
Okay, the issue of the morale of members. The morale of the members are very good. They police the protest action, and they use the necessary training and equipment to deal with these actions, with the protest action. Yes, it's very, very stressful on all our members, because it sprang up all over the country and becomes a serious challenge for us.
But the morale of our members, they are report on duty. They not suddenly there's an increase in absenteeism. That is not the case. They are report on duty and they deal with the situation.
No, Chair, just a follow-up on this issue. I know you are saying you are exploring. But I think there must be reasons around exploring. It can't be because weapons are getting lost there. We are also getting lost in the CPS. Now, you need to deal with it around a different strategy of making sure. The issue I've raised earlier, how do you deal with criminals within the police force? The same thing is happening with the Metro Police. You know, you have those things happening. But you can't want to try and... I'm just saying, you know, we need to find different strategies around dealing with crime and all other issues. Because, you see, my worry is we are becoming a country of slow implementers. Of, you know, we change policy almost every day, you know, which is a problem. You know, whilst we must find a way of making sure that we implement what we have, policies that we have now, you know, and see as to where the gaps are, how do we deal with those specific gaps and problems, rather than when the weapons get lost, you start thinking about, and start exploring as you have indicated, and I think that is a wrong way of starting to deal with specific issues that confront the community. Because, you know, you should have been saying, what is it that we do around rooting out this corrupt or criminal situation in the metropolis, rather than going the route you're going.
Okay, I just want to respond. I was using the weapons as one example of a lack of accountability. That if one looks at civilian oversight, for example, there are various mechanisms around civilian oversight around the police. The Metro Police, for example, are not necessary. The weapons were just one example of some of the problems. And when you're talking about the number of weapons, you're talking about an excessive number of weapons given the number of Metro policemen that you've got, okay, which places it in a slightly different context to the police. But I was just using that as an example. I think what we need to be looking at is issues around what is the Constitution saying? What are the issues around civilian oversight? And where are we heading with policing? It's not about going forwards and backwards. It's about coming up with a very clear and decisive policy approach, which hasn't happened in the past. A lot of the things we've done around policing have happened, I mean, some people even refer to it as certain things that have happened, like with the private security, as a silent revolution, okay? Because it's not as if it was intentional that the private security companies would begin to play more and more this role. It just happens, okay? Now, what we're saying is let's go back and develop a proper policy approach to how policing should be happening in this country, which includes the Metro Police, which includes issues of civilian oversight, which includes issues of command and control. I was just using the weapons as one issue. So I think it's actually fitting in with what you're saying. Let's not knee-jerk around things. Let's develop proper policy and approaches to how we see policing going forward, so we don't find ourselves in situations where things just happen in policing. They must be well thought through and based on solid policy foundations, which include international best practices.
Chair, I want to come close to the Honourable Member in support of his view. Generally, the trend with the government departments throughout, I think the Honourable Member is correct, is to, when they are confronted with the implementation of the existing policies, to start the trend of exploring on changing the policy instead of tightening the screws and implementing tough laws. I think that is the issue that the Honourable Member is raising. And I'm not impressed at all about that response, because of the example of the loss of firearms or whatever. The issue here is that the departments must stop changing policies. developing policy from time to time. Everybody is saying policies of this government are nice throughout the world. We're being praised. I mean, we've got so nice policies. But you are not implementing these policies. You are changing from time to time. The fourth parliament, you are starting changing. The fifth parliament, you are going to change. The sixth parliament, you are going to change till there's uprisings again in this country. People are going to uprise. They are going to revolt against the government. Because instead of you, administrators, implementing these policies, you are keeping on changing them. Keeping up on coming up with new concepts from time to time. I'm not sure whether you are in a school of I'm not sure what are we doing. I mean, what we are interested in seeing you is implementing the policies. Don't start exploring anything. Implement what you have started from the beginning. I think if we can make a tight research here, look back from 1994, what we can realize is that many men of these policies that have been introduced have not been implemented. Instead, when there are gaps, you change the policy. That is the weakness of the administration. That's the weakness of bureaucracy internationally. So we are saying to you, implement. Stop changing. Stop exploring. When the police are criminals, arrest them on the spot. If you find them on the ice on transit, shoot and kill them. That's simple. Don't talk about these laws, the way that, I mean, when you are being confronted with people which are asking about killing, and then you come and say, no, we're going to implement the, I mean, I'm not sure that concept that is being used. But in simple terms, it means you are going to shoot and kill, but it's being said in the other ways. I think what we want to see, it's the confidence of the people from the police. When we were in the Eastern Cape, Honorable Chairperson, we asked the police about how are they dealing with these things, and like the heist and transit, the problems. Why those people are being arrested? I think a week after, there was a case in Twersey, where those guys, all of them were shot and killed. All of them were dead, except one. I think there were five or six, and then only one. And the police killed all of them. Exactly, that's what we want. We don't want people to be killed. But those people, they are killing people when they are taking this money. And when they are taking this money, people are losing confidence in the police. But when the police, they prove themselves, and then few criminals who are going to go and try and take a chance, they're going to say, no, let's move back. But when you attempt to explore, to change the policy, you're wasting time. I'm trying to emphasize the point that the honorable member is correct. Don't tell us about exploring. Tell us about tightening the screws in the present policy and implementing it. Till first time that as people which are monitoring and evaluating the implementation of these policies, we say to you, no, these policies are not working. You can't introduce a policy and later come back and say you are changing it. Once we have not said it's wrong, I'm just appealing to the Secretariat and the police, please stop changing. There's nothing wrong with these policies. Who's wrong? It's you. Because you are politicizing. In fact, you are politicking instead of implementing. Let us debate. Don't debate. Implement. If you find a criminal robbing,
don't debate with the criminal. You've got all the equipment. We are passing these budgets here to say, get the vest, get so many bullets, get so many machine guns. What do you want to discuss behind the machine gun? I think it's a very, very, very serious situation where we have to come and debate with you here the exploration instead of debating with you to say, no. Now we feel that you are implementing the policies very strongly. Can't you a little bit, you know, reduce your arms are too strong? I mean, it's us who are supposed to appeal to you, not you to appeal to the policy. Whilst people are complaining outside, because the community is not happy. Don't explore, please implement till we cry. Why should we cry that these policies are good, but these policies are not felt by our communities? The whole communities, you used to say, why people are not convinced about how we're dealing with crime in this country. It used to be white people then. That's what we used to say. But now, everybody in this country, it's not a matter of whites, everybody, blacks, poorest of the poor, the richest of the rich, are saying we're not safe in this country. Why? Because the police are busy debating, exploring, instead of implementing the policies in a more stronger way. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
I think this is the last that I'm coming in. You see, I thought the secretariat, you know, I thought what the secretariat would be telling us, and I think in terms of their presentation, was to make sure as to how they move in making sure that they assist the ministry, you know, around monitoring what the police are doing, but also monitoring the minister himself, you see, as to how is he, through the commissioners, implementing those specific programs. But in terms of what I see here, they will be unable to monitor what the minister is doing. Maybe let's get some clarity, because you see, if you will be sitting there doing everything for a minister, because I expect the minister to sit with his officials, you know, so that he gives instructions, you monitor what is it that he's doing there and all those things, you know. And if you're part of that situation, if you're part of that situation on a daily basis, it's like the minister now sitting in the secretariat, you know, in terms of, I'm not sure, but I'm saying that's how I see this particular proposal. And that is why, in most cases, you are now, because I know the minister must also oversee, must also monitor what is it that they're supposed to do, you see. But you see, in this case, because you see, you are now calling, they're now calling themselves a police force, no longer a service. There's a difference now. It means there's command instructions that are coming down. I'm not sure, do we want to do the command instructions and not the minister, so that you can monitor that particular process? Maybe if we can get some clarity, because we have seen what is happening in a number of departments. In a number of departments, you know, there's this creation of structures around the minister. And my understanding of your secretariat was to make sure that as part of the civil society, you know, overseeing what happens in the department so that you can monitor, you can, some of the things you're raising are very good. Are very good as to what is it that you want to do in terms of research, whatever, and all those things. But I don't think it is correct, because, you see, these generals must look at the implementation of the Police Act, and they must come with specific policies around how the police must move forward, so they advise the minister. Now, if the monitoring group, you can make some inputs. If the monitoring group is going to lead that particular process, you know, that creates problems, you see. Because, you see, you come with issues that you might not understand what the police is supposed to do, what the generals are thinking, and you come with policies that they can implement. When they don't implement, you know, then there's a problem somewhere. And they'll say, no, no, this policy does not belong to us. Because, you see, our thinking in terms of that specific process is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm just saying there might be a conflict at some point. How do we deal with all those? Maybe you might assist us in the way you think things must be worked out, how we must be dealt with. And that is my view. I don't know. But that's how I read things.
You can respond. You're noted.
Okay. I think, first of all, in terms of monitoring the minister, one needs to look at the Constitution and look at under what basis is the civilian secretariat established. And it's established under 208 of the Constitution, which makes it very clear that it reports to the minister. You cannot report to somebody and monitor them. We report and are accountable to the minister. And if you take into account what's been said about not rehashing policies that have already been developed, Parliament adopted the White Paper on Safety and Security. Okay. That White Paper on Safety and Security stated very clearly that policy cannot be done by the people that implement policy. That there needs to be a division between the operational arm and the policy arm. The Constitution also very clearly gives the minister the mandate to establish policy, not the police themselves. And the Constitution is completely clear on that issue. The role of the Secretariat in having a policy division is to be able to support the minister to do that and to implement what Parliament adopted in terms of the White Paper on Safety and Security, which said that you cannot be both operational and determining your own policy, and that there needs to be a division between those two functions. So I think that is what the Secretariat is now being implemented by the minister in terms of the Secretariat.
Commissioner? Chairperson, I'll get time or after Commissioner Jacobs or General Jacobs is raising a head. Sometimes I'll be covered by his answer.
He can respond. Thank you, Chair. Unfortunately, it's not on that high level. It's regarding the question that the Commission asked about the schools at the firearm-free zones. About 4 years ago, the then Minister for Safety and Security actually published a proposal in the Gazette to declare all schools and universities as firearm-free zones. But there was interaction with the Department of Education, and eventually the Minister of Education decided to declare all schools as what they call dangerous object-free zones. And that includes drugs, it includes firearms, explosives, anything that could be dangerous. So all schools have been declared as such. And I think the solution lies with the interaction between the schools and the police, what General Amur has referred to. But that option about firearm-free zones has already been explored, and I think it has been covered in terms of the declaration by the Minister of Education. Thank you.
Honorable.
Yeah. Thanks, sir. In fact, I understand what the Secretary is saying. As I understand it, it changes nothing to what I'm saying. Not at all. But the point that I want to raise again is that there are other concerns that you might be seeing here, which I want to make this comment so that I might be corrected on the way by the police, or they might find the way. There are many sensitive things in this country that in the implementation of the policy or the law or you should also be careful about. But at times, you wonder. For instance, somewhere in Sanderstorp, these past weeks, when there was a court case of those people which are alleged to have killed the old man, so there were these AWP members carrying their own dogs. I think it's police dogs, that horse is their own dogs. And then I wondered, when there are such situations, at least the police, as I'm saying, my comment is saying, other things are sensitive, and the way the police said they are handling them, it depends to the situation. How do they see what will happen? I mean, you analyze the situation before you act. But it is very important because the community out there, the way they interpret, and when these things happen, others are saying, we'll do the same. When you hear a member of any political party in this country saying people must arm themselves, I think, again, the police, I know politicians are dealing with these things, I think, again, the police needs to assist the communities so that even others who might make such calls can make sure that they don't do. I think, I don't want to blame police or to refer everything to the police, but I'm trying to say, so that the members of the communities can be sure that they are protected because the police are there, at least these things need to be attended to. I'm making a comment. I'm not sure how, but when I heard this man saying they are calling on the Afrikaners to arm themselves, I understand there was another comment which was saying those are few people which are saying that. But I'm interested to say the police, at least, they need to deal with these issues. I know you won't go to the newspapers and say this is how we're dealing with them, but you'll deal with them in a way so that other members of the communities are not tempted to say the same statements or to do the same thing. I think I'm understood about what I'm saying. And also I'm worried or interested to know, maybe the police will explain to us, what is the story of this old flag? Is it not in the hands of the police to ensure that people are not doing things that they are not supposed to be done? Is the old flag supposed to be lifted? If it's not, then is it not responsibility of the police to ensure that it's not? Remember, I've said, I understand these things are sensitive, but I'm raising them so that we can deal with them together. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, Chair, I just wanted to some clarity. My understanding is the National Commissioner is the HOD of the department. Is it not so? And that's why the conflict I referred to earlier. Because it is him who sees issues in his department that are not, you know, that he thinks needs to be changed, and then drafts policies and gives to the minister, and maybe advise the minister to say, this is what's supposed to happen. Because this is what we see in most of the departments. There might be a difference between the police and whatever. Maybe we need to understand that. Because I'm not sure. I understand that you are reporting to the minister, no? But what then is the role of the HOD? You know, so sort of clarify us, because we think the HOD must to us must drive, because he's the accounting officer. Because what we do is we'll call the HOD to come and account here, and nobody else, in terms of, you know, and that's our understanding, because we are here on behalf of the minister and the HOD. You see, and if we can be clarified. There might be a difference between normal departments and the police, because you see the army also comes here. You know? But the general will come here in an account. We know there's a secretariat, you know? But the accounting officer will come in account to us. You see, I just want clarity as far as that process is concerned, so that tomorrow when a conflict arises, you know, we must not have found ourselves having developed. Policy that is not assisting us to move forward, you know. You're talking about the white paper. I agree, I've not read it. I'll go through it now, you know? Because I want to understand that situation, you see. Because you can't have a lot of commanders or a lot of accounting officers. There must be one accounting officer and a lot of people that are close to the accounting office. You see, that's my understanding. You see, now you can't have a lot of accounting officers. That creates a problem. That creates a conflict. You see.
All right, let me add, or let's take for example the policy about the dog unit. I'm sure the crafter and the drafter is Commissioner Lamour, not so. He will craft this thing, that policy, on behalf of the National Commissioner. Or sometimes we are at fault. Let us hear from the police side.
Respond. Yes. Thanks, Chairperson. I think the issue here is just how we've understood each other, but I would like to submit, honorable members, that we are in full agreement with each other. The members have raised the issue that for us the matter before us is simply to implement policy. Now, with regard to the first issue that was raised, that is about single police, the issue is precisely what honorable members have said, implementing policy. And also with regard to the issues relating to the powers of the National Commissioner, as well as the powers of the Minister, we're in complete agreement with the honorable members, as well as with the Constitution. Honorable members will remember that the Constitution speaks not us, of a single police service. So that's why I'm saying, in then dealing with the issue of the Metro Police, we are completely consistent with the policy that you, honorable members, have passed. However, what happened, honorable members, is that the SAPS Act is actually older than the Constitution. So before the adoption of the Constitution, some processes began where people began to establish metros and other local police institutions. But that, honorable members, also did not happen in a vacuum. In the process, there was some consistent amendment of the Police Act itself to try and make sure that, because if honorable members look at the Constitution, it vests all policing powers on the minister. It's a national competency, but it then distributes the oversight function and monitoring from national down to local level. That's the establishment of the CPS. That's the structure that is in the Constitution. Now, the Constitution says the police, that is in terms now of control of the police and the powers of policing, shall exist at national, province, and local. Now, the metro part of it is part of that local. But the control thereof, the Constitution says, the minister is responsible for policing as a function, as well as the development of policy, of that policy. Now, the National Commissioner is responsible for the management and the control of the service. Now, the Constitution says, in line with policing policy, which would have been developed by the minister and the directives of the cabinet minister responsible for policy. So, honorable members, to address the first question. Now, honorable members are correct. We have then to try and make sure that in terms of control, the management and control of police, whether that the police function exists at national or whether it exists at provincial or whether it exists at local, that the management and control thereof lies with the National Commissioner. Now, there are weaknesses in terms of the Metro Police. Now, when you then talk about the single police, that is what has to be aligned. That function is not aligned. At provincial level it is, but not at local level. It is not. And another, I would just like to make one last point in regard to that. The reason for that is because the Constitution in Chapter 11 also provides for some legislation to be developed to deal with the powers of police at local level. And it is the absence of that legislation that creates the vacuum, and that's the vacuum that we're trying to deal with. Now, again, honorable members should not worry much about what we will do, because ultimately in dealing with these things, we'll present them before you. It's got to go to cabinet, but ultimately it's got to come to parliament for it
to be part of national policy and legislation. So there won't be things that will happen besides you knowing. Now, in terms of that other issue that honorable members have raised about the conflict of interest, it's actually, honorable members, the thinking in terms of the constitution that you've adopted was that because of the critical nature of the work of policing, when we create a police service, we should allow it to focus on issues of policing. And then the minister should have some other capacity that represents civilians to say, how is this function that comes from professional police, how is it impacting on us? Now, that's when the members talk about the oversight function of the minister. But then the minister is a civilian who is responsible to be accountable to you as parliament. But then he needs some support to say, whatever you are saying, is he actually as a civilian carrying that out in terms of developing the policing policy? That is where then the function in the constitution that you, honorable, have adopted. That's the function that creates the secretariat. To say the minister then must have that capacity that is dedicated to focusing on policy issues. Honorable members, I hope that probably would just help to make some contribution. Thank you, Chairperson.
Engagement has also helped us with regard to the coming policy debates. It has helped us a lot, and I think other outstanding issues we will deal with when we do oversight and when we go and visit the provinces. Thank you very much for your presentations. And we hope that this is not the last interaction. We appreciate the fact that when we request you to appear before the committee,